Oliver, you know what got me through the postseason this year with all my traveling, baseball, football? Oops. Oliver, you know what got me through, we're laughing, and this is a very serious matter.
I'm sorry.
So stop laughing and having fun.
Okay.
Please.
No, I know where you're going with this, because I'm right in the same boat. Go ahead.
Do you know what got me through?
I do.
The baseball and football schedules. I'm going all over. My dad used to have a joke. I'm working so hard, I passed myself in the airport the other day. That's how I feel. I'm going to and from everywhere. Every morning started with Athletic Greens. I swear to you, unless I just ran out, every morning started with Athletic Greens. And I felt like that kept me awake, healthy, and they probably don't even want me saying that, because it's maybe I'm overselling it, but every morning during October and all my crazy schedule started with me on the road scooping Athletic Greens into my shaker cup and drinking, slugging it down. And that was my little hidden gem.
Yes. No, I'm with you. I do it every. I take it every single morning on an empty stomach. I get up, put my coffee on while it's brewing. I have my Athletic Greens. I down that, and then boom. I've got my 75 vitamins, because that's what it has. Minerals, whole food source ingredients, multivitamins, multimineral, probiotics. It's got everything that you pretty much need to start your day. And within 3.5 seconds, it's in your body. You know what it does? It fills the nutritional gaps, right? So you eat every day. You're eating your food. And, you know, you think you're healthy, eating healthy food. But this fills the gaps in your diet. And it gives you energy, helps you focus. And it aids with gut health and digestion, which is huge, because everything starts with your gut. You got to remember this. That is the engine of your body. If you have a healthy gut, you got a healthy life. Sports a healthy immune system. By the way, no GMOs, no chemicals, no artificial anything.
And here's the other part of it. And this is the most important part of it. You know how they say trust your gut?
Mm.
How can you trust something that's not healthy? How can you trust your gut if you're not using Athletic Greens? Here's the other part that's second most important. Athletic Greens is going to give you an immune-supporting free one-year supply of vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase if you visit Athletic Greens. Listen to this. athleticgreens.com/daddyissues. athleticgreens.com/daddyissues. For us, for you. That way we both win.
The holidays came early, boys, here at Manscaped, which is the leading men's hygiene brand. They just launched new products, including their all-new ultra-premium body wash and a 2-in-1 shampoo and conditioner, which is kind of great. I use it. My son uses it. So Manscaped, I just want to speak personally for a second. I have been using Manscaped for a long while now, and it's going on 2 years. I like to groom. I just do. The untrimmed pubes, it's gross. All right. And you need to buy this for yourself or your husband or your brother or whatever it is, because it just makes everything look beautiful. You know what I mean? You just feel clean and shorn. And it's time you leave your significant other some cookies and milk at the bottom of your chimney, if you know what I mean. Huh? I'm talking about the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0. It is the shit. You'll find the Signature Lawnmower 4.0. This electric trimmer has proprietary advanced skin-safe technology to reduce cuts on your nuts. That's the truth. It's the truth. You're talking to someone who has been using this. It's smooth. It's clean. It's effective. It's hygienic. So 'tis the season to load up on Manscaped products. Get yourself, your dad, your brother, your friends, the best gift of all, the Manscaped Performance Package 4.0.
All you have to do is go to Manscaped, M-A-N-S-C-A-P-E-D.com, Manscaped.com, and use code Joe Oliver, who was a great catcher for the Reds, by the way.
He was a great catcher.
Joe Oliver for 20% off and free shipping. Come on, tighten it up, guys. Tighten it up.
Cavalry Audio.
Oh, hi, Joe.
I don't even want you coming on here with like a crappy attitude.
I don't. I literally like was flying home from work to get to this podcast, like fucking shredded the driveway to my house in Albuquerque, you know, skidded out, ran in, put some fresh batteries in, and here I am, dude.
Two things. One, I didn't know you had a house.
Yeah. Well, the first half of this job, I was at a hotel, and then the second half, I got a house just to change it up a little bit and, you know, have a little home life.
Yeah, no, that's nice. And secondly, I don't understand the placing of this recording device.
I don't know. I'm in between two chairs. I got a little dunce cap on, you know. I mean,
yeah, it's ridiculous.
Would you prefer if I change the scenery?
No, it's just disconcerting to look at you under a fan.
It's these
and
two
like
chairs.
The arms of two chairs.
I know.
I don't quite understand.
There's no desk in this room, and I don't know, I'm just trying to find a place to prop up my phone so we can see each other. You know, I'm doing the best I can, Joe. I'm doing the best I can.
You know, I think when people say that, that's a way of just eliminating all criticism because there's nothing I can say now.
Right. Yeah, what are you going to say? Like, you know, go buy a desk for the podcast? You know, I mean...
No, and as long as you're doing the best you can...
Yeah.
In this crazy world, in this hectic life.
Yeah.
What possibly could I come at you with are doing the best you can?
Let me ask you a question. Are you doing the best that you can in this life?
I'm doing more than I should. Yeah. I had all that big run of games, and now I've had 2 days off, and now I'm trying to put my little football boards together that I get done at Kinko's every week. So
yeah.
I saw my lady Kathleen at Kinko's, got this thing all printed out, and now I have to go do, I get to go do a Ravens-Dolphins game on Thursday night, and... yeah, so I'm learning about Devin Duvernay and Lamar Jackson, who I love watching play, but I just don't know a lot about the Dolphins these days, and I'm trying to play catch-up. I mean, this is week 10, and I've got to act like I know what's happened weeks 1 through 9 with the Miami Dolphins.
Well, you should really focus on Myles Gaskin.
Do you have him?
Yeah, I have him. He's in my fantasy league.
He's not really. Is he getting you any points?
No, I mean he's a PPR guy, you know. So I get some points.
He's kind
there.
Of a receiving guy. He's a receiving threat.
Yeah,
I'm looking at.
He fills it in, but the problem is Derrick Henry went down. That's my guy. Edmonds went down. Cardinals. That's my guy. So now I'm struggling, dude. I'm really struggling with my running back.
We should just turn this into a fantasy football podcast. Hey, so listen, if you're in the market for a backup tight end, let me throw the name Nick Boyle at you. He's being activated this week for the first time, making a season debut this week. And on the other side, Mike Gesicki is probably already not available.
No,
but
he's not.
Yeah.
The Boyle
Smythe.
Boyle's available. Huh? Boyle's available?
Yeah.
No, I do come to you with fantasy advice sometimes and thinking that you know things.
I don't know anything.
You
don't
know
anything.
No, you don't know
Actually, I know too much.
Yeah.
As we said, I bite on the bait that is knowing too much about rosters. And I'm like, hey, this guy, just keep an eye out.
Right.
And no, it doesn't work.
Right. No, you have too much backstory for these players to give them an emotional incentive to actually make points. But really, it doesn't even matter. You know what I mean? Their backstory, where they came from, all of the things that you know do not translate to fantasy points. So
that's right. That's right. And, you know, I wasn't even going to do this podcast today. I was going to send you and Margo a text and Josh. Josh isn't on here. Because I woke up to the worst possible news.
Oh, no. What?
And I'm going to bring it up, but if it's no good, I mean, you have to you have to agree and tell me that we will cut it out.
Okay. Okay.
All right. Paul Rudd is the sexiest man alive.
You're kidding me.
That is the worst possible news that I could get.
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Paul Rudd.
Just take that in.
Okay. I'm taking it in. Because I'm in that. I'm in it. I am one of the. All right. I did a whole photo shoot for it. I will be in that People magazine, 50 Sexiest Men Alive or whatever the fuck it is. I'm in it.
But you didn't win. You're not number one.
I knew I wasn't going to win. I'm just happy to be nominated, really. And I guess they're going off of personality and humor, you know?
And career.
And
charisma.
Career. Right. Yeah. All of it. Yeah, but you should be happy, right? You should be that's your boy. No? I mean...
Yeah.
Like you're.
Yeah, I mean, I've known him since we were 18 years old, and I don't know. It's the first time I've known the man alive.
How did you find this out?
Well, it's in my New York Post app.
Is it? You love that.
6:15 this morning, Blake woke up, and I was killing time till he went from wake up to. Trying to bust out of his monkey lock on his door.
God, you still got monkey lock? What is going on with this?
What do you think? They're seven now? They're still 3.5.
I know, but how long is the monkey lock supposed to be on there for? Like in their teens?
Yes. Yes. Had you had a monkey lock, you wouldn't have had a dalliance with the lady of the evening at the age of 15.
Maybe. You know what? Maybe they should create an adult monkey lock. Well, we can't come out of our rooms. It's like, come on,
well,
honey.
You can come out of your, please. You can come out of your room, but the monkey lock's actually in your car.
Right.
So you got to walk there. And if you have to walk there, you're probably not going to go.
Yeah. No, it's good.
But let's get back to Paul Rudd. So
yeah.
Paul Rudd. Is the sexiest man alive.
Well, you know what? Hey, Paul, congratulations.
Why don't you cut a promo right now that they can put on the People magazine website that you can congratulate Paul Rudd.
Okay.
Okay.
Hey, this is Oliver Hudson corresponding for People magazine. I want to congratulate Paul Rudd on being the sexiest man alive. Was I in the running? I was. Did I make the magazine? Yes, I did. But Paul, you beat out a lot of beautiful men, a lot of chiseled men with incredible bodies and no chest hair. You are none of those things. Yet you still prevailed. And we, Joe Buck and myself, Oliver Hudson, from Daddy Issues, are extremely proud of you. And we wish you the best going forward. And hopefully you can repeat next year. It's unlikely unless you have Ant-Man 7. Ant-Man, right? Is that what it is?
Ant-Man. It's Ant-Man.
But hey, we're here for you, and we're a little upset you're not doing this podcast. We've tried to get you many, many times. But
yeah, I asked him a long time ago, but he was looking for some privacy at the same time taking photos for People magazine's Sexiest Man Alive.
He's too sexy for Daddy Issues. That's fine.
I might have to reach back out to Paul and see if we can get him on, but I think he's got his own podcast. He went from, I don't want to do your podcast because I think it's just enough of me and I want some privacy, to I have my own podcast.
Yeah, of course. Who doesn't have their own podcast? I mean, everyone has their podcast. Everyone has a fucking podcast. We've talked about this.
No, I know, but it's there's only one person that can say, he is the sexiest man alive, and he has a podcast, and that person now is Paul Rudd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you, let's say Paul can't fulfill his duties as the sexiest man alive.
Yeah, it's
what
it's
if you came in second and you're the understudy, you're the stand-in, you're the backup.
You know what I would do? I would hire a team of professionals, investigators, to dig up all kinds of dirt on him, get him canceled, and then I will prevail.
You will ascend to the throne
yeah.
of the sexiest man alive. How come they don't do a sexiest man who's dead competition?
That's a good idea. Who would that be? James Dean, maybe?
Yeah, James Dean.
Yeah, sexiest dead man alive.
Hey, everybody back up. This guy's sizzling. It's Jimmy Dean. No, not the sausage guy. James Dean. Sexiest dead man going.
By the way, sexiest dead man alive is kind of good. I like that. I like that. I feel like we come up with pretty good ideas on this show, you know, that we just never really follow through with.
That's the problem. It's about putting things, taking it from the, you know, the incubation stage and actually putting them into practice.
Have you been a follow through guy all your life? Because I am the opposite of that. And we're talking
about that about you.
We're talking about daddy issues, right? And I would say that comes from my dad. You know, I mean, he would honestly never sort of follow through with the things that he would tell me. And that's
So it's like a tip of the cap to your dad?
A little bit, yeah. You know,
I too am not going to follow through on what I said I would do. Love you, Dad.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an affliction, I guess. But you seem like a follow through guy, right?
I try not to. I'm aware that I cannot have things left undone, so I try like hell to not keep adding to my list because it becomes overwhelming. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's my anxiety. I don't know what it is. But if, like, I'm different. Like, I'm different than you. If I have a text on my phone, I have to return it, like, immediately. If I have emails on my phone has got to sit on zero emails left.
Yeah.
Like right now, there's 11, and that's driving me crazy.
Yeah.
And then I pick up my sister's phone, who's more anally retentive than I am, and it's her email icon on her iPhone has like 4,072.
Yeah, no.
And same. I've got 11.
Same with my wife. My wife, Erin, has 1,000, like 40,000 unread emails. My email icon at this point is as clear as day. I had 80 emails, you know, and 78 of them are just junk. But I still have to go like swipe, get rid of that shit.
Are you putting this ridiculous idea of interacting with fans on this bullshit email, is that going to your phone? Or is that going to be like your time to get on a computer at the local library?
No, it's on my phone. It's on my phone. I can access it via my phone, and it's been pretty prolific. It's been productive.
But those aren't popping up. Like, that would drive me crazy.
No,
like,
no.
You have 31 emails from people you don't know.
No.
I already have too many emails that I have to deal with.
No. On everything in my phone, when it says, you know, allow notifications, it's a no. I don't have any notifications on my phone. I hate them. Except for my texts, you know, even my emails, aside from the specific folder email address that I created for myself and this show, even my actual email address, I do not have notifications on. It's just too much buzzing, you know, it's too much.
Yeah, I might have to look into that.
Yeah, take off all your notifications.
I even toyed with the idea of taking my email just off my phone.
Oh, really?
Where I would have to sit down at this computer in my office or sit down with an iPad on the road to go into my emails. But I feel like that would be...
Nah.
That would be just overwhelming. If I sat down and I saw 200 emails sitting there, I would short circuit.
Yeah, no, it's too much. You need your phone for your emails. Don't take it off. That's not a smart play. But I do need that clean email slate, you know? It's weird. I have a mixture. Like, I'm not an OCD guy in any way, but there are certain things that I have to have in order. And one of those is my phone. It's got to remain clear. And going back to sort of the texting thing, there are a few people when I get texts that I have anxiety about because I know that I have to respond right away. And you were 100% one of them. Oh, without a doubt. There's only two.
Who am I on the list? I'm only two? I'm one of two?
You're one of two. It's you and Mark Rose. That's it. You know?
And what about your mom? What about Kate?
No, because...
What about Margo and Josh?
No, it's not the same. It's not the same. When I get an email, it just says Joe Buck, and it's not attached to any Joe Buck chain that we're on, and it's just a singular buck. I immediately, my heart rate goes up, and I'm like, oh, fuck, okay. I'm working right now. I'm in the middle of a scene.
That's horrible.
He texted me, and I got to respond because I'm worried that he's going to, you know, not be nice or get upset with me in some kind of a way. You know, I do. Like you do bring me some anxiety.
Awesome. That's good to know because I think I do that to most everybody in my life.
You do. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more Daddy Issues.
And you did something, I don't know when it was, 3 weeks back that we have not talked about in this podcast, which was, I felt really a lot cooler after this happened.
Mm-hmm.
You called me during a scene as they were rolling you in your fake car mm-hmm. with your fake child behind, I mean, a real person, but not your kid, a fake TV show child in a car seat behind. And by the way, that kid looked way too big to be in a car seat. And you called me as they're like, okay, Oliver, we're going to need you to, when the car stops, you get out, you say, what are you doing here? And you and I were talking. That's like when I'm doing a Super Bowl or I'll be doing the World Series and friends, you,
yeah,
Josh, will text me, call me, Vetter. I've like taken video of me, like a reverse camera video of me calling the first inning of the World Series, just messing with him. I did that one time, and then he took his phone out during a, what do you call it? You know,
concert.
The show ends. Yeah, during a concert, but the show ends. The
backstage.
No, out on the show. Out on the stage. It ends.
Encore.
I keep wanting to say it. An encore.
Yeah.
Can come up with that word. And he took it out and was videoing himself on his phone singing to fans. Like, what do you think about that? I was like, I got nothing. That's was the
cool.
coolest thing I've ever seen in my life.
That's cool.
But you called me in the middle of a scene, and I just have never been so touched.
No, I remember that.
In,
I was, it was
all
a,
our time.
It was a drive-up scene. So, you know, half of the shot was me driving up to the place where I had to stop, and you were on the phone through half of that scene. So, you know, when you watch that, you don't really see me. It's just a speck of me, but I'm still on the phone with you.
Don't you have a person for that? Don't they have an Oliver Hudson stand-in?
No, because I drive up and then do the scene. It's a whole like one-shot situation, you know. But I was on the phone with you talking, and then as I pulled up to the mark where I have to do where I have to actually say dialogue, I'm like, all right, Joe, I got to go, and then fucking, you know, clicked you off, and then started the scene.
No, that would blow people's minds. Like I was one time, you know, Jason Patrick, longtime great friend of mine, I went down to visit him with my friend Ryan when he was shooting the Alamo.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a scene where Billy Bob Thornton, who's in the movie, has to go up on this like walkway on top of the Alamo and look out at the army coming at him. And we're down in the middle of the Alamo, it's an exterior shot of the Alamo. And Billy Bob Thornton's talking to me, such a diehard Cardinal baseball fan. He's talking to me about the Cardinals bullpen. And I'm in there, I'm like, don't you need to kind of concentrate? They're like, and I mean, I can't tell you how many extras they had. This was like hundreds, if not 1,000 people, that like a big battle scene.
Yeah.
And I'm in the middle of it. And he's like, I mean, they need a left-hander. Cardinals need a left-hander. They got the closer. Like, action. He's like, hold on a second. He hands me his like Gatorade, walks up to the top, looks left, looks right, looks left, comes back down. He's like, so if they get a left-hander, now, and I'm like, if people only knew, like, this intense part of the movie, and you're talking to me on the inside of this shot about the Cardinals' bullpen.
Yeah.
And I guess it's a way of normalizing kind of what you're doing.
Well, I think when you right? do it so much, and you can relate to this because you've been in the booth for 1,000 years, you know, you can definitely go switch it on from what, from you into your work, you know, and it's funny you even bring that story up because I remember my dad, Kurt, was doing a movie called Executive Decision, and I was a PA on it, and it was this crazy scene where Steven Seagal is like basically gonna, it's his death scene, where he's like reaching up and they have to close the hatch. And in order to close the hatch to save everyone and to complete their mission, Seagal has to die, right?
Very Poseidon Adventure of them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so I'm with my dad and we're just bullshitting, you know, before the scene. He's like, yeah, blah, 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 talking about something. And they're rolling. And I'm like, oh my God, are we still talking? And da, da, da. And they're like rolling and they're like an action. And I stop talking. And he immediately goes into, I remember the line exactly, looking down, screaming, you're not going to make it. And then and then he goes, you are. And then Steven Seagal leaves, the whole fucking intense. His cheeks are jiggling. His face is red. And then they cut. And then, boom, he's right back into our conversation again. You know? And I was like, wow, that's impressive. That's very impressive.
I mean, that's taking it to the next level. If somebody's dying on screen and they're doing a close-up of your face,
yeah,
and he's talking to you about your homework and then walking out and going, how old were you when this was happening?
I was actually 16 years old. It was like a summer job, and I was working as a PA on his movie. You know, but it just shows you, he's been doing it since he's 9 years old. You know, I mean, it's not like a first time situation. I mean, he you know it so well, you know so well that nothing's going to faze you.
It may help him in a weird way.
Yeah,
I feel like that when you have a little bit of a diversion or something that pops that bubble of whatever it is that you're focused in on.
Mm-hmm.
It's why I think I do text people or I read text or whatever while I'm doing a Super Bowl. It's so, if you think about the enormity of what you're doing in that case, mm-hmm. you know, doing a Super Bowl to 115 million people. And if you misstep or really screw up, it's not going to be good. It's going to be a bad month to be you.
Yeah.
And maybe the rest of your career. It's kind of nice to have a reminder of the real world in there that kind of grounds you and let you know that, you know, no matter what, you still have. It's why I walk to the back of the booth all the time and I make myself make a cup of coffee or make a hot tea. Or it's a complete, you know, what was it in summer school? Tension breaker had to be done.
Yeah.
Like you're up in the front of the booth. It's intense. You're talking to 100 million people. And then it's like, I can go back to the booth. I can walk 10 feet behind me and I can put a cup of coffee under the Keurig machine. I don't really want coffee. But if I go back there, it's like, that's what I do when I'm at home and I'm in my shorts and t-shirt and my kids are there, my wife's there. And it's just a reminder that there's a real world out there. I'm not in it right now.
Right.
I'm just doing this game for 100 million people. And if I don't know, it's something that kind of makes me just clear my head and go, okay, relax. Everything's good.
Yeah.
Everything, it's nothing, nobody's going to die here.
Yeah.
And you know, just enjoy it.
Yeah.
Because soon you're going to be making coffee in your shorts and t-shirt, and you're not going to be doing this, so you might as well have fun and do it well.
Yeah. No, I know it's true. I mean, it's so true. At the end of the day, it's just another game, you know? And by the way, if you did fuck up, like, it means absolutely nothing. And what does even a fuck up mean? You know, and that's what I go through, honestly, as an actor. And I think you can probably relate where you have to be willing to sort of screw up in a way because that frees you. It allows you some freedom to just be you and do your thing. And my biggest issue as an actor, which I think holds me back from being better than I am or reaching the potential that I know that I have is exactly what we're talking about, which is being fearless, not being afraid to just go there and be bad, you know, and try something new. It's a little bit different. You can't just try something off the cuff, and because I get a second take, you don't get a second take. You know, I was doing a scene a few days ago with the lead girl in the show, Elodie, and she's a really fantastic actor. I mean, she's very, very good. She's unafraid, and she will do takes where she just goes fucking after it. And even though they might not use it and it might not work, she doesn't care. It gets it out. She wants to do it that way. And then the next take, she'll do it differently. And we were doing this scene and she was like, you need to go, just fucking go there. And then I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, I'm weirdly nervous or scared to look stupid, you know? And I said, all right, let's go. One more take. Let's do it. And I did it. And I just fucking went, and it was great, you know? And she's like, that's it. And so you take things from your co-stars in my field anyway, and they can actually help you get better if they can push you and if you allow them to push you, you know?
But yours is different in that it's recorded. As you said, you have a second take, but also you're really relying on that other person.
Yes. I
mean, it's a give and take.
Yes.
And if that other person goes bananas, well, now it almost feels there's a fine line between doing it your way and being respectful to everybody else and everybody else's time and the money and the tape that's left in the recorder and the whatever it is. You can't go crazy and try, but the insecure part of it for you is maybe my choice is going to be dumb and they're going to basically laugh at how bad this effort
right.
was.
Right.
And I mean, I have that a little bit if I'll say something a little bit goofy, which I do sometimes. And those are the only memorable times, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, like if I say stuff we were talking about our high school football coaches the other night, last Thursday, and I was talking about, it was Salute Your Coach Week or something in the NFL, and Troy was talking about three coaches that had a huge impact on his career and his life. And then a play happened and neither one of us said anything. And I was like, well, since you're asking, Troy, my high school football coach, his name was Ron Holtman, and a legend in the St. Louis high school football coach. And he was a coach forever. And
yeah,
he was one of the winningest guys. And I said, for the life of me, the only thing I can figure is he liked me so much that he wanted me standing next to him on the sidelines during games. He just didn't want me out of his sight. And Troy, you know, got it that
yeah.
it was a joke and I was making fun of myself.
Yeah.
But that's the only thing I remember from 3.5 hours of doing that game.
Because you're questioning it. You're questioning whether that was good or not, right? You're like, did I hit it? Was that a good one?
Right. Well, sometimes you do stuff and it's like, that was a joke, you know,
yeah.
but not everybody's... Not everybody's thinking along, and sometimes it's so out of nowhere that people are like, well, he couldn't have been kidding about that.
What you should have done is talked about like your badminton coach, you know, and how like inspirational.
My fencing coach.
Exactly. Your fencing coach and how inspirational he was to you.
Right. Every time I put that mask down and I was looking through that mesh, I saw greatness on the other side. And I was ready to tackle the world.
But the funny thing is with acting, you know, is you're working off of the other person. So, you know, if you're coming in there with some sort of preconceived idea of how you want to do the scene on every line, and this is just me, but you're not really in the moment of the scene. So the actor is going to do their lines a certain way, and it might change between each take, and you have to react accordingly. You know, I mean, if they're coming in soft on something that you were expecting them to come in hard on, and you were going to react to that, you can't just use that preconceived reaction and then go after it, it looks ridiculous. So you have to listen, pay attention to how they are doing the scene on that particular line, and then react accordingly. You know what I mean?
If you're enjoying this episode of Daddy Issues, don't keep it to yourself. Please share the love and tell a friend about Daddy Issues and go subscribe on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. We beg
you. That's right. Stay tuned. You don't want to miss what's coming up right after the break.
You know what's always blown me away to shift slightly from this is some of the greatest actors seem so awkward talking without a script.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you see, I guess I'm picking on him, but if you see De Niro, mm-hmm. like do an award show or be on Fallon or something, it's like, what?
Mm-hmm.
What is this?
Oh yeah.
It's like, it's just awkward. Like they're not, and I'm not saying that the guy, I don't know him. I never will know him. It doesn't matter. And he won't listen to this. And if he does, what's up, Robert? And I call you Bobby. But some of these people, it's just like, my God, you can't do better than that.
Well,
like,
but that's the thing. You know what I mean? Like people are built differently. Some actors are great, you know, with public speaking or off the cuff or, you know, taking on an interview and being able to sort of react accordingly to what's happening and have personality and have charisma. And then some are incredible fucking actors, but they don't have that piece. A lot of comedians, honestly, you know, in sort of public settings, sometimes they're very insecure and get quiet. You know, that's just not their... That's not their medium. They have to be on stage. They have to have a camera in front of them. They have to have lines. You know, everyone's just different that way.
I know. Maybe I just expect too much from Bobby.
You do. Look, Bobby De Niro is one of the great actors of our time. Who gives a fuck?
How many things have you done with him?
How many what?
How many things have you done with him? Other than Goodfellas.
Well, I did Goodfellas, you know, Casino. Other than those, zero.
Okay. Okay.
I know. I'd be scared, dude. Like, I, of course.
For 1 minute, then you'd get into it. It's like Rudd, you know, working with Michael Douglas or Rudd working with the people that he's worked with. Mm-hmm. He's told me, I mean, he's a real student, as you are, of the medium. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine, I mean, growing up the way you grew up, you would still be intimidated to work with somebody that was...
Oh, yeah.
Really?
I think...
Like Nicholson. Would you be freaked out to work with Nicholson?
Yeah. Here's the thing is, you know, even the biggest stars in the world get nervous. Everyone gets a little nervous. You know what I mean? I remember, I think it was... I don't remember the exact movie it was, but... I think my mom was talking to Meryl Streep or something like that. And I think she was imparting some sort of wisdom or giving me a lesson of some kind. And Meryl's about to start a movie and, you know, talking candidly to my mom and talking about her nerves. And it's like, if Meryl Streep is fucking nervous as butterflies, then I'm like, come on. You know? I mean,
yeah.
People, it's a natural thing. It means that you care. It's about what you do with those nerves, because sometimes they can be completely debilitating, you know, and they will stop progress. It's about sort of taking that feeling and turning it into something really great, you know?
Right.
Because for me, it can get debilitating. You know, if I get nervous, which I get little nerves, but nothing crazy now that I'm older. And when I was a little bit younger, honestly, the nerves would take me over and really fuck me up. But, you know, now it's like, okay, I'm nervous. Fucking go. Let's go. Let's use whatever these weird feelings are, you know?
Yeah. Well, your senses probably bring that up and allow you to use them. You're probably supposed to have them. And
you don't get nerves, do you, anymore? I mean...
Rarely. I'm more excited to do the game and have fun with it than yeah. I am being nervous. Sometimes if I've got to walk out in front of a big crowd, like when I did that benefit for your mom and it's Martin Short's in the crowd and, you know, your whole family's there and Kathy Griffin's hosting and mm-hmm. Will I Am is back there.
Right. And all the celebrities and comedians who you perceive are judging you.
Right. And then I was Zach Braff and all these people, and I walk out there and I'm trying to be funny. Mm-hmm. But then 2 seconds in, I'm like, I love this. I want to make them laugh.
Yeah.
And surprise them. I like that. I just, it's that moment of walking out there like, I don't know how this is going to go. But if you come a little bit loaded, not drunk, but with something to say,
yeah.
Then it's a comforting feeling. I don't think that ever goes away. The more you're prepared, the more I do and the more I cram for these games and the more information I have, the better I feel, the more I'm going to be myself. If I come in half-cocked, I never get comfortable. I'm yep. always thinking like I'm going to be so for you or anybody in business or in work life, the more prepared you are, the more you can be yourself.
100%, and that's how you and I – that's how what you do and what I do actually mesh and cross over. Because if you know your lines backwards and fucking forwards, you're good. You can play. You can do what you want to do. You can yeah. do it differently. There's nothing that's going to stop you from experimenting and doing it differently. If you don't, and if you're not as prepared as you would like to be, you're half-cocked, just like you said. Now you're trying to remember your lines, and then it takes away all of the spontaneity that could happen, you know? So that's the biggest thing. And honestly, that's one of the biggest lessons that Kurt imparted on me, which was very simple, which is just that. Know your lines backwards and forwards, then you're free, you know? And then the other thing he said is just think something. When the camera's on you, and if it's a moment where you have to be sort of quiet, you know, and maybe sort of, you know, have a moment, it doesn't matter what you're thinking. It doesn't matter if you're thinking within the context of the scene, because the scene itself will dictate that. You know, the context, the what that scene is about will tell the audience what you're thinking. But you could be thinking anything. You could be thinking about sort of your lunch or whatever. As long as you're thinking something and you can see, the audience can see you working, can see you thinking.
Yeah, I'm
then they'll attach it to whatever the scene was. You know, I'm like, that's smart. It's so fucking true, you know?
Which leads me to the thing that I've been writing for SNL, which is the coldest, most cruel serial killers depicted in film history having a speech impediment and how that changes the intensity of the scene, or just talking like my 3-year-old son, Blake.
Right.
Like, you know, if yeah. I said, where did you bury the body? It's over heel. I put it right over heel. It just blows the whole thing.
Totally. Like, it's in the river. You're like, wait a minute, where? The river. You're like, wait a minute. It does. It takes away any of the sort of, you know, the badass, fearful, you know, serial killer vibe.
Right. Anthony Hopkins.
I can help you catch him, Clarice.
What? Sorry. Clarice.
Yes. Like I said. Clarice. Totally. It's like
Clarice.
It's like the Night Stalker.
I can help you catch him, Clarice.
Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker. He's like, state your name, Richard Ramirez. Like, wait a minute. What? Richard Ramirez.
Oh, God, how do you spell that?
R-A-I-C-H-R Ramirez. Immediately, the guy's not even like that dangerous anymore. You're like, oh, I feel bad for this guy.
Are you okay? Do you need to talk? All right, I want to get to some of these things that and can I just tell Margo, even on this tape, that I don't have anybody an email. She sent me this 400 times for Vince Vaughn, Adam Sandler, or Nick Kroll. Mm-hmm. I have no email for any of them.
I have
got it. Thank you.
You're responding in real time.
Yes.
Yeah, because right. I'm trying to get in touch with, I thought you knew their like people or something.
Well, I mean, Sandler, it. I mean, I'm friends with Sandler.
Yeah, this is about the animated series, so we can talk after the show.
You don't think now's the time?
No.
I mean, we can talk now.
Margo, let's talk about the animated series that is a massive undertaking.
Right. All we need are animators, an outlet, and $10 million. It's all we need.
Easy.
Yeah, if there's any big time executives out there at Fox listening, that's all we need. We need 10 million animators and a slot, a time slot.
Nothing. No problem.
Hey, you know what? Daddy Issues has dreams, all right? We have goals. And,
right.
And they may be lofty, but yeah, we're trying, you know what I mean?
We're trying and we're trending.
We're trending. Yeah, Margo sent us this sort of, I don't know what it was. I mean, the number one show that was trending was way far from this country. I didn't even understand the language, but I guess we're trending globally. Daddy Issues is trending globally. I still think she created this and made it up. I think she's
just trying to keep us on the hook.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know where her sources are coming from, but you know, it made me feel good.
It made me feel good too for 6 to 8 seconds. All right. Here's phone a friend. There's a body in the trunk of your car.
Yeah.
Who do you call for help and why?
Okay, I like this. And is this a body that obviously you had nothing to do with? You just found this body.
Yeah, you didn't kill somebody, but there's you. I mean, I guess you'd call the police. So yes, you killed somebody.
I would call one of my great friends, Joey DeSalvo, who's the sheriff of Aspen, Colorado.
You're implicating him in some sort of crime here.
Well, I'm calling him because it's a good chance that he put it there, you know?
Oh.
Yeah. But I would call Joey and ask him what the hell to do. That's what I would do because he's the only law enforcement person that I know. I mean, I'm not going to call my mom. You know, mom, I've got a body in the trunk of my car. What do I do? Honey, like, whose car is it? It's my car, mom. Well, I mean, is he cold? And it would be a whole thing, you know, and then she'd probably try to send him to WeCare to have colonics.
Oh, it's nothing that a colonic can't fix.
Exactly.
I would call my friend Steve Horn, who I work with, who's the smartest man alive. And Margo probably saw him, the long-haired guy that looks like Joey Ramone and who's the actor that was in The Fugitive? Tommy Lee Jones.
Tommy Lee.
Like Joey Ramone and Tommy Lee Jones had a baby.
Mm.
He's 72 and looks like he's 52. And he's the smartest person. He would know exactly how to either get rid of it or where I should go with it and what I should say or shouldn't say.
If you found a bag in the middle of the desert of $50 million, would you turn it in?
No.
Would you just
Where would I turn it in? Whoever I turned it into would be...
Well, the authorities. I mean, like, okay, you're on a hike in Joshua Tree, right? You're going camping in Joshua Tree because we all know that you love to camp with Michelle and the boys.
And, right.
Yeah. You guys are big campers. And, right. You know, you're going on your hike and Michelle has her little shorts on with like her butt cheeks coming out. maybe a little, you know, it's...
I don't think we need details okay. aren't really Sorry. Pertinent to the okay. question.
Right. And then Wyatt is like, Daddy, what's this? And you go pull this like crazy bag out of a bush and it's got $50 million in it. 50, $50 million. Would you call the FBI? Would you call authorities and say, hey guys, look, I found $50 million here. Like, you know, or would you say, fuck it, I'm taking that cash?
I think I would wrestle with it for a while. And then I think I would land on eventually, because right now I'm not in that situation. I think I can legitimately and calmly think through it. I think it would be dirty money. And dirty money that's left is there for the taking. Now, then it becomes No Country for Old Men or whatever, and you got a guy with a nail gun chasing you around looking for the money because he just stored it there while he was, you know, burying a body one dune over. So,
all right, let me.
I'd get out of there fast, but I would take the money. I wouldn't even know where to begin to turn it into who.
No, I know. But you'd turn it, you'd call authorities. I mean, you'd call someone and say, I found this money.
Yes, I'd call 1-800-AUTHORITIES.
I think that's too
Hi,
many.
Are you an authority?
That's too many numbers, Joe. It won't work.
180-AUTHORITY.
I know. I'd probably take it. I think I'd have to take it.
All right. You must spend $1 million in one night. But you can only spend it on doing things, no material item purchases. Who do you bring and what do you do? But your choices are Adam Sandler, Matthew McConaughey, or Dax Shepard.
Oh, my God. I'd bring McConaughey. That's my number one.
Okay.
I'd bring him.
You do? You can't buy a Lincoln with it, but he's probably got some in the backyard. He can go trash a Lincoln in a desert.
That's a tough one. Well, McConaughey likes to golf. McConaughey still drinks. You know, I think we'd probably private plane it, you know, and just go global and eat good food and golf and fucking party. I don't know. I mean, maybe get if 24 hours, that's tough. I mean, I guess I can't.
Yeah, I would definitely go private plane and try to play the best golf hole at three of the best golf courses around the world and keep going west so that you could kind of stay ahead of the sunset.
That's good. And
but I'd need like a supersonic jet, and the $10 million, it would probably cost more than I had, but I could use the money that we're going to use for our animation team.
Yeah.
And just kick some more in and then go play like the 18th hole at St. Andrews.
That's a good idea. And we could tip a lot, just big tips. You know what I mean?
That would be the best part, actually.
Yeah.
How great would that be if, you know, some guy brings you your car and you're like, here's $100,000.
Yeah, exactly. That
Thanks
would be
for
great.
Your time.
That would be, that's actually awesome. So that's good. It's indulging in the things that we love to do, which wouldn't cost as much as we are being given, but tipping out massive. I like
right.
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we're in agreement.
Just leaving your mark. Okay, good.
Don't go anywhere. We'll be back after this short break with more Daddy Issues.
What do these three things have in common? Discussions, sewing machines, screws. I know it.
Really?
Yeah.
Say it. I have no idea.
Threads.
Wow.
Yes, sir. That's correct.
You seem down, Margot.
She is.
I have a new microphone, and I'm afraid if I like talk too loud or jubilantly that it's going to be very annoying. So I'm trying to keep like a real radio voice on.
Margot.
Yes.
Are you dating? Yes,
not really. No.
How come?
No. I have not dated since for 4 years, really.
What?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Why not? Mm-hmm.
Because in Atlanta, I didn't know anybody. I didn't have any friends or family. So like, it's hard enough to meet people. And I don't know, the dating apps, like, ugh, what if somebody tries to murder me? I don't have anyone to call.
Fair point. You know?
So it just never felt like the right thing. Now that I'm in Tucson, I mean, a little bit, perhaps.
But 4 years is a long time. I think this has more to do with you than it is anything else. Like, what are you afraid of?
I don't really want to be in a relationship, and dating usually leads to that. You know?
Yeah.
So
are you going on dates at all? Or are you just super solo?
No, super solo. No, I haven't been on a date. I haven't been on a date in that long either, actually.
Would you like Oliver to introduce you possibly to the sexiest dead man alive?
Yeah.
Yes, please. Yes, that sounds right. He sounds like he wouldn't be big on commitment, which neither am I. So that might work, actually.
Well, his name is Rock Hudson.
Rock Hudson. Okay, I like that. I like the name.
That's going to be a little complicated.
In many ways. Number one, he is dead. And number two, he doesn't like girls. You know, what's funny is growing up, everyone was like, are you related to Rock Hudson? And of course, I said yes.
I thought you were related to Brolin and Barbara Streisand.
I am. That was a funny bit. That was really fun for a while. Yeah, actually, you
what's
know,
the old man Brolin's name?
James? James Brolin. Yeah. Yeah.
James.
So in my Instagram sort of life, there was a moment where I was sort of playing this bit, doing this bit that Barbara Streisand was actually my mother, and I was sort of reaching out to her and wondering why she sort of abandoned me and, you know, all this bullshit.
Did she ever come back?
She did. This is what I was going to say. So she eventually commented on one of my posts, and it was just a beautiful day. It was awesome. And she was played along totally. She's like, listen, son, like, it's been hard and blah, blah, blah. And she did a thing. So it was actually pretty cool.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It was cool.
That is fantastic.
Cool. I know.
There's one other question on here, and I know the answer to it, but it leads me to what I was going to talk about in the last 2 minutes. And it's how do you make a Kleenex dance?
You blow it?
No. No.
No?
You put a little boogie in it. And the reason I bring that up is because I feel like you and I are very similar in our nose picking delight.
Yeah.
You're a nose picker. I'm a nose picker.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
How much would you say the majority of your nose picking happens in your car?
Yeah. I think that's probably good.
I have a picture of you and Cabo with a stalagmite booger on your finger in portrait mode that would change the world.
Don't send that to People Magazine, because I would.
That can be like inset in your photo spread. What'd you wear for your photo spread?
Oh my God. No, I know. I mean, look. Yeah, maybe it's disgusting. Everyone can relate to getting up in there and picking something that is just epic. And there is this satisfaction, this freeing feeling that happens with that. And I don't care if the people are listening are like, ew, gross. You have all done it. And, you know, just own it. Because there's something
beautiful. I agree.
Beautiful.
When you have like a smashed booger wall, like against the,
yes,
you know, like that's covering the inside part of the outside part of your nose, you know what
yes.
I mean, like,
yes,
and you scrape that,
yes, it's
and now
scrape.
you've got like a booger sheet.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. No, the booger sheet, dude.
Is there anything better?
No, there's not. You're so right. It's like that scrape. And you don't want to scrape too hard. It's like scraping a sticker off of something. You know what I mean?
You can't break it.
You can't break it. So it's like the scrape, and then you get it, and then it's, I mean, come on. It's as satisfying as it gets.
I mean, you feel like you've lost weight when you
do. You all of a sudden can breathe. You know,
you can breathe better.
Yeah.
Flowers smell better.
Yeah.
I do my job better. I'm a better father.
Oh, you're a better everything. It's an accomplishment. You know, it's an actual, you know, like something.
These are the things I did today.
Yeah. You can check it off the to-do list.
Right.
Yeah. For sure.
I finished my day of work. I made dinner for the kids. I emptied the dishwasher. I took a booger sheet out of my right nostril.
I just want to say one thing before we go. You know, I did join Cameo, and I was apprehensive about it. It's been a couple weeks, and I can honestly say that it's been really, really fun.
It was just like a free plug. This is bullshit. I don't bring my stuff on here to plug.
What are you plugging except for your hair?
Easy joke. Low-hanging fruit.
Well, you set it up. You set it up, dude.
Low-hanging fruit. God. Yeah, so this is basically now a
It's not a plug. It's not even a plug. I'm
for
just
Oliver on Cameo.
It's not a plug. It's not a plug, okay? I'm just saying that you think that it's going to be one thing, but you're actually communicating with a bunch of really amazing human beings who are doing something great for their people, whether it be their wife, whether it be their friend, you know, whatever it is. And you get to experience and hear their stories. And it's
you getting any traction?
Yeah, it's been pretty good. It's been pretty good. You know?
Why? See, that's a lie. That's a tell right there. When you get really high pitched like that.
No,
that's a lie.
I know, but that's like the cliche.
Yeah,
that's that's the cliche tell. Good. It's not. And I only say that I go high up in my octaves because I haven't really done promotion for it. I've just sort of, you know, just been on.
Have you broken up with anybody for anybody?
No, I would love to do that though, but I have not done it. I haven't done it. But it's been like sick people, you know, like friends who are sick and in the hospital who love a certain show, and there's a communication aspect to it that I actually dig. And I know you were interested in how it was going, so I just wanted to bring it up to you.
Thank you. I'm going to file that right under booger wall.
Right under.
I did a cameo for free
for Margo for her brother-in-law.
He sure did. And it was the greatest. It was like the greatest thing for my brother-in-law. He loved it. But I was with my sister. We were looking at your cameo, Oliver, like your account, because I posted about it. Mm-hmm. And she was like, God, I'd love a cameo from Oliver. And I was like, oh, maybe you should get one for Michael for, you know, your anniversary tomorrow. And she said, well, Michael gets annoyed. You and Michael look almost identical. Mm. You are my brother-in-law and you are like replicas of each other. And that led to he's a big fan of Joe for many, many years. And so I asked Joe, can you do one? And he did. He did such a great job.
I did it before the Chiefs game on Sunday.
Yeah.
And now I'm wondering if your brother-in-law would like to be a part of people for kids, sexiest man, sexiest gentleman alive promotion.
He could do it. I mean, like, I'm going to have to
say, he won't come in first. Paul's son Jack will win that one. But please do. Send a picture. Yeah. I'll submit it.
Yeah.
Send it over to people's people.
Well, you know what? As we're coming to a close, it's a good question, Joe. Like, I've been one of the 50 sexiest men alive. This is my second time. Where are you at? How come you haven't been, how come you're not on this list? What's going on?
I check no boxes. I got nothing. I check zero boxes. You do. You got your little hat, your little hair flip, your mustache, your facial hair, your chiseled good looks, your ability to be naked on Instagram and not care. I don't have any of that stuff.
Not yet. In a few more years, once these contracts you know, once these contracts run out and you get to be Joe Buck, the real Joe Buck, the Joe Buck that I want the whole fucking world to see, you're gonna do some great things there, buddy.
Okay, well then here's what we're gonna do. I climbed Kilimanjaro with my daughter when she was 16. That was 9 years ago. God, that's hard for me to believe. 9 years ago. And I said, what I'm going to do for my boys who are now 3 is I'm going to keep myself in good enough shape that when they are 16, so 13 years from now, I will climb Kilimanjaro with them. That's like it's the something out in the offing. Okay. So within that time frame, I am going to get myself professionally lined up, physically lined up
mm-hmm.
to be in that magazine on that list.
Okay. Good.
But it's going to take publicists and the little bluebirds that flew around Cinderella
mm-hmm.
To, you know, make everything looks perfect.
No, you're going to.
But I'm getting in that.
You're going to do it, dude. Al Michaels was, so you can do it.
How does that happen? Do you have to be nominated? Like, does somebody nominate you to be in that magazine?
No,
people just pick people.
It's all,
like,
it's,
these are our choices.
Yeah, it's whatever.
This is where Oliver downplays it.
No, like I'm not downplaying it. It's not like there's a nomination process. I got a call. I got a call. It was like, they want you to do this. Da, 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 da. I said, all right, cool. And the photo shoot was crazy. I haven't seen the pictures yet. I mean, I saw them when we were doing them. I thought it was supposed to come out on Tuesday. Maybe it did. But I get there and there's two outfits, like two sort of looks or whatever. And it's these cool jeans and one of them is this shirt that is so paper thin, I might as well not have been wearing a shirt. And they just pour buckets of water over me. I'm just drenched, like I've gotten out of a shower. And I've got all this like jewelry on, and I'm sort of sitting on this stool, like all pouty, and my shirt sticking to my chest and my weird abs. And, you know, I'm flexing so hard that my back went out. I'm not even kidding. The next 4 days, my lower back was killing me because I was trying to flex my abs so hard. And so
you're like,
oh yeah,
take it.
I was like, yeah,
take it. Take the picture now. Do you command a higher cameo rate if you're like the higher up the list you are? And after one, is there like a ranking? Like, could you be 23rd or
no,
15th
I don't.
Or
I think there
49th?
Is the sexiest man, which is Mr. Rudd. And then I think after that, I think it's just a wash. I think everyone
else. Do you guys have to like fate him with it? Do you have to have like a party? You throw him a party as the 49 sexiest losers?
Yeah. It's like everyone's, there's one winner and everyone else is just losers.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Congrats.
All right.
Bye. See you, man.
All right, baby.
All right. Bye.
Love you. Listen to Daddy Issues on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Daddy Issues is a production of Cavalry Audio and iHeartMedia, produced by Margo Carmichael.
Sound engineering and editing by Josh Windisch.
Executive produced by Joe Bach, Oliver Hudson, Dana Brunetti, and Keegan Rosenberger.